Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tron. Han, how are you?
I'm swell, Jim. Doing super. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Not doing too bad. Tonight, we get to start off our second set of 50 shows, show number 51, Things That Go Bump. Well, obviously a play on, you know, Halloween coming up, things that go bump in the night. Well, there's things that go bump when it comes to, you know, doing a project, doing a dental facility. There's always bumps in the road. I think, Han, you've said it before. There's never a perfect project with nothing that you know, goes astray, that goes wrong. It will happen. It's construction. You got to expect it and kind of basically plan for it. And so tonight we're going to talk about all those things that Han and I have seen, or at least a few of them, what we can cram in our 60-minute show, some of the things that we've seen, how to kind of plan for them, how to minimize them, and effectively what's the best thing to do to prepare yourself for those bumps in the road. Because they happen, and the best thing you can do from day one is expect it.
Well, I mean, Jim, for us, from the start of every project, okay, and it's true. Both Jim and I had been involved in the field of architecture for 3.5 decades. We're still young guys, okay? We started really, really young. And through those years and projects and stuff like that, I can say this. No matter how hard you work, no matter how diligent you do your work and stuff like that, there are things that are out of your control, and they will happen. The main thing is managing those things. You can't avoid things that you don't know or things that you didn't plan for, but how you manage it really matters. So, because in the spirit of Halloween, we're not trying to scare you, but it's going to be scary. Jim?
Going to be scary? Well, yeah, you're right. Any one of the things that we're talking about tonight could effectively collapse a project if not handled properly, and could be the straw that breaks the camel's back, to use that vernacular, in that, they can spiral out of control and become disasters. And, we don't want to scare you, but at the same time, we want to help to at least educate that you got to be prepared for these things, at least in the sense that, all right, something's going to happen, because we all know when you're unprepared, you kind of become a reactionary. You react to it and effectively make the wrong decision because of that. So if you expect that, something's going to happen, I've got a team, and that's an important thing to talk about a little bit, Han. You've got a team of people. If you do it right and follow our program, you've got a team of people who will help you through these issues and get the issues resolved as effectively and least costly as possible, so that you can continue to move on. And we're talking about things like construction delays. We're talking about things like materials that are no longer available. We're talking about unforeseen things, like things that maybe they're under the ground that nobody knew about, things like easements that never were recorded, things like building departments who decide that or maybe build apartments that change people midstream. And then all of a sudden, we've had discussions, you know, the power that a building inspector has over your project. Change that person up during your project. It could be a disastrous situation. And what do you do? Because he or she may have a totally different outlook on what needs to be done or how things need to be accomplished. And it's not cut and dry. Don't let anybody fool you that construction is cut and dry. Don't let anybody fool you that drawings are perfect. And definitely don't let anybody fool you that codes are black and white. They're on black and white pieces of paper, but they sure aren't black and white when it comes to the implementation out in the field. Barley Hunt.
That is correct. Okay. And Jim hit the nail on the head on all topics. This is something that we encounter, not just thought of. This is actual life experience, and sometimes it can give you premature gray hair because of it.
Yeah, I mean, let's use an example. A building official happened to be the fire marshal on a particular project. Walks through the project. While it's being framed up, the roof structure is in, the walls are in place. The discussion and review was having to do with the sprinkler heads and how they were going to be placed in the plinthum, which is the space above the ceiling, between the ceiling tile and the roof structure. The decision was made. The direction was given. He gave clarification. Everything was fine, right? Not so.
Right.
It wasn't less than 3 weeks later, totally changed his thought, kind of rescinded his original discussion and decided that he wanted to have a second set of sprinkler systems installed so that sprinklers could be utilized or that the structure above had to be fire rated. Well, that's great if you know before the structure's been put in place. After installation, fire rating structures is very expensive. And so it was a pretty big headache. It had to be resolved. We worked through it and got the thing accomplished. But that's like Han said, that's a prime real life example of a bump in the road. Oh, what happens? And you may say, well, isn't that kind of stuff resolved during plan review? Here's an interesting thing. You know, sure, they look at the plans. The plans examiner is a different person than the inspector in most communities. Maybe in a small community it's not, but in most communities, they're totally two different people. And a lot of time they don't talk to each other. And a lot of times they interpret the codes differently. And both of them have the power to say what needs to be accomplished out there. And theoretically, you could be in a position where one tells you to do one thing, and then while you're out there under construction, the other will tell you to do something different. And that's what you run into. So, yeah, it's an interesting life, isn't it, Han?
Yes. You deal with, can I use this dictator, the word?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you're dealing with dictators, all right? I'm sorry. I don't know if there's any other word because they have so much power.
They do. They have a lot of power.
Either right or wrong, okay? The code say a minimum requirement, and they adhere to the code. But if they want you to go beyond the code requirement, no matter how unreasonable it is, the spoken and sometimes unspoken words is that my way or no certificate of occupancy. Okay.
Yeah.
That is
yeah.
that is as close to extortion as you can get.
Yeah, it's just that there isn't any money supposed to be changed, and you know.
No, just a threat.
Yeah, just the threat of not opening your doors, and you know, don't get us wrong. Not everyone is like that, but it happens. Like Han said, we've been doing this for years and years and years, and we've seen it happen more than enough to say, yep, you know, be cognizant, be prepared, don't be surprised if something like that happens on your particular project. Here's how you solve that problem. First of all, you involve, we always recommend it, but you definitely involve as many of the agencies that are reviewing and approving and inspecting the project, you involve them early. Early in the planning stages, early in the review processes. Heck, if they'll let you review the drawings preliminarily before you're even done with them, the more the better. And get that inspector, if you can get the inspector. Get the fire marshal, if you can get the fire marshal. Get those people in the room while you're making the review with everyone else that's part of that organization, meaning the government agency, the zoning and planning and building departments. If you can get them in the room at the same time and everybody is there speaking their piece before a single thing gets built, you have a better chance of not having one of these major bumps happen down the road. Now, obviously, someone could forget what they talked about or forget what they say. So like Han always says, write it down. So if you have a meeting.
Twice.
Yeah. Yeah. Write it down and send it to everybody. Han loves to do that. He's very good at that. So you have a meeting, you have a review, you write it all down, send it to everybody, say, this is what we had a discussion on. This is what we'd like to, how we're going to utilize and solve this moving forward. If you have any questions or if you don't agree, let us know. Well, right there, you're involving them early. They can say their piece, and you've got a record of it. So it helps greatly down the road when, you know, the building inspector comes and says, no, you need to do this. And you're going to say, George, we had our preliminary cursory review. And at that time, you said you wanted us to do it that way. That's the way we designed. Remember, we even sent out the memo. Oh, by the way, here's a copy of it. Do you remember doing that? And, well, most times, George is going to remember that he did it and say, okay, I understand that. I understand why we did that. And, yeah, we'll go with that. I mean, that's the best way to solve that big major bump in the road.
Most of the time, yeah, most of the time, if George is a reasonable individual and he left his ego at home, everything will go smoothly. However, we have encountered a situation where George flexes his muscle and say, well, I've changed my mind. Do it this way, this time. You are at the mercy, okay? Again, it's, you know, you manage the flow of information, the design, the communication, and all that as best you can. And but Jim gave some good advice. When we are involved in a project, we always try to get the building official on board early, introduce ourselves, you know, present the questions, our interpretation of the current code. And what we're trying to do, and get their feedback, give them ownership, so that they enjoy that. Most of them do, and that way you create a rapport. You know, from an owner standpoint, you can do the same. You know, at least let the city know what you're planning, thinking, and all that stuff, and they can help you. They can lead you. Your design team will do their own homework on as well. That are specific to their, you know, their trade and so on, and altogether communication. If you share them and things like that, and we encourage you to. It will help everybody on the team. You know, information is golden. Communication are the same. Okay, it just helps everyone. Jim?
Well, it does help everyone, but bottom line, it helps you, the doc. It helps you get a quality project on time and on budget, as opposed to one that's way over time and way over budget and effectively becomes a nightmare. This is another reason why we are so strongly advocates for having the design team, meaning your architect, be part of the construction process. Because during this scenario, during the construction side, if you don't have that continuity of, George, do you remember back when we met? And by the way, we're not picking on George. If there are any Georges out there that are listening, you know, it's not, you're not bad people. It's just an example, right? But, you know, George, do you remember when we met? You know, if the architect is not there during construction, you've done that nasty thing of, eliminating them from the construction because you think it's going to save money. Well, you know, that's that checks and balances. That's that continuity that we talked about previously that you need to move forward with and keep. You need that continuity through the whole project because until the day you open the doors, it's not done. Until the day you got your occupancy permit and you can open your doors, it's not done. So, you know, that's kind of a very crucial but also a poignant example. Han, I'm going to give you one, and I want your opinion. And I'm just going to use a few words, cattails on a piece of property. What do you do? What's the very first thing you think of?
I think of wetland.
Correct.
I think of now, unusable. I think of unusable real estate.
I think of EPA. I think of wetlands. And I think of check it out, get them involved early, and figure out how to solve the problem. There will be some unusable real estate. There will be some pieces and parts that can't be built on. There will be some things that you will have to do. I'm not saying that the piece of property is useless. I'm not saying that the piece of property is, run away kind of thing. But it has to be reviewed before you buy anything. Get your design people involved and get them, especially the civil component and your architect, in there and talking with the approval agencies, specifically the EPA and the people who have jurisdiction over wetlands, because the wetlands don't go away, and it's a federal law. It's not a local jurisdiction. They can't say yay or nay. Oh, go ahead and just, bulldoze those things out of the way and fill in that divot in the ground. It doesn't work that way.
No, I was involved in a project, a commercial development for a grocery store. And the property, we discovered a wetland on the property. It was dry. During the summer season, but it's qualified, listed as wetland area, and Jim's right. I don't believe that you have the legal authority to omit it, but just kind of forget about it. You can relocate the wetland, but it's an expensive endeavor.
It's time consuming. It's mostly time consuming because it is an issue that you have to first of all get through all the agencies and the approvals, and because they're stringent. Remember, we're dealing with government bureaucracy moves slower than molasses. And molasses in the wintertime, it's slow. And so you got to get them involved and get into that and figure out what has to be done to accomplish it. It's easy to fix, meaning usually the remedy of, okay, I've got some cattails, I've got a divot over here, or I've got a little dinky creek or a little dinky waterway that runs through the property that's a great place for ducks and other waterfowls that utilize wetlands, plus everybody from, you know, frogs and crickets. But this that stuff can be relocated. Some people don't even know it, but you can relocate it on a different piece of property if you want to. It doesn't even have to be relocated on your piece of property. Again, most people don't understand that and or know it, but as long as the quality and quantity meets the criteria, it can be revised, reworked, and relocated based upon their standards. Now, I'll also give you an example of kind of the planning. If you have a quantity of one on your property, if you're relocating, plan on a quantity of two. And that's just a good rule of thumb. So you're going to put in twice as much of what there was before. And that's a very easy way to help expedite and get the approval processes. Do not think you're going to go in and say, okay, I've got a quantity of one. You know, I have, you know, let's say I have 1 square foot of wetlands on the property. You don't do that. It's obviously more than that. But let's say I have 1 square foot. Don't think you're going to be able to relocate a half a square foot and satisfy. You won't. They're going to be looking for much more than just one. And so plan on it. Plan on it. Do it early. Definitely don't wait till, well, I'm, you know, under construction, I'm going to start digging a hole. That's quickest way to shut a project down in a heartbeat, isn't it, Hon?
Yep. Now, Jim, because we're talking about property and land and things like that, what I find or have witnessed a lot is that owners buying land and have the building design, then try to fit the building onto a piece of land that they purchase, rather than design the building to fit, you know, the site. You know, saying is that they independently on a different island somewhere in the Bahamas, they have a designer that will design a building for them without having any knowledge or consideration for the property. So often that they try to fit a building that was designed somewhere else by somebody else, they have absolutely no knowledge of the site, and it rarely ever come out favorable. Okay.
Yeah, that's a recipe for a disaster.
Yes, it happened. I've seen it all the time. You know, they don't look at besides the wetland. You know, the topography of the, you know, of the site. Access to the site, if you know the configuration, the setback, the easement, you know, it's basically, oh, I got a flat piece of land, I plunked the building down here, and everybody should be happy. And that's rarely ever work out, you know, favorable. Jim?
Well, orientation's another one. I mean, orientation from a view standpoint, from, you know, coming up to the building, orientation to the sun, orientation to the prevailing winds and storms and how that affects where things like entry doors should be, where windows should be, where shade devices should be. I mean, it's just a long laundry list of things that have to be looked at and reviewed when you do a site evaluation. And I'll add a little bit to this, hon. Buying a piece of property without having a design professional as part of your decision-making team is effectively, in my opinion, trying to buy a car without, first of all, getting your spouse to give you an opinion, your kids to give you an opinion, and without even thinking about what your budget is, meaning how much can I afford on a monthly basis? If you take all three of those things and ignore them and go buy a car, what do you think you're going to do? You're going to buy the thing that you like, which looks good, and you won't give a hoot about what the costs are. But reality is going to come back and get you that the wife doesn't like it. The kids definitely don't like it because they, one, either can't fit, there's not enough room for all their gear going to soccer practice or whatever. And then third, this thing is twice as much in the way of maintenance and cost than we can afford on a particular budget. And, oh, because it's a whatever particular vehicle, the insurance is three times more. A disaster. Well, that's what happens when you buy a piece of property without having the design team at least look at it and evaluate it and give you the proper input. Han, I know you're chomping at the bit. You want to talk about that one big time.
I'll be nice. Okay, I'll be nice. Yes, it does happen. Okay. The worst thing that could happen in the process is for architects and designers is that they get a phone call from the client and they go, I bought a building, I bought a piece of land, and I want you to help me. That's pretty much after, putting the cart, in front of the horse. Okay. Because by then you already committed. Now you are functioning from a, reactionary mode, and it makes things a little bit more difficult, make things a little bit possibly more, expensive, and the compromise, will have to be worked out so that it's workable for you. Okay, I'm not picking on anyone. Most of our clients are highly educated professionals. The dentists are. And for some reason, they just don't consult those who are involved that could help them with making the decisions that is necessary so that the land or the building that they are considering will work for them and meet their business objective and things like that. So, the worst time to bring your design professional on is after the fact. Okay, it's not fun. Not fun for you. Not fun for your design professional. And it's not cheap. Not cheap to solve.
It can be very costly. It can be very costly from an initial standpoint and be very costly for a solution standpoint in that what do you have to do to be able to put your facility on that piece of property? Prime example, project we had, the owner bought a old medical office. The medical office was at a certain price. When we got involved, the project, it was determined that three variances were going to be required because two corners of the building were over the property lines. So actually they were on adjacent pieces of property. Remember, this is an existing building. And because the requirement of the dentist was going to require that we're going to have to do some additions to the building. Both the front and the back of the building had to be torn down. The front wall and the back wall had to be torn down and relocated to be able to establish a necessary amount of square footage for the project. Both of those needed variances because they fell into the right-of-way and setback requirements. Then on the side of the building, because the code had changed since the building was originally built, and it was in the right-of-way, meaning the right-of-way of the road that had been changed and increased. So that required a variance because it was an existing structure, but we got through that. Bottom line, when we were all said and done, when demo was completed on that building, there was one wall left of the building standing. And the only reason why that wall wasn't torn down is because the government agency would have said, okay, now you have to build it to the new code standards, and effectively wouldn't have been able to put in a building of half the size that we had there. So it would have been impossible to actually even build on. So the one wall was maintained at a cost, and it was pretty costly. And then three walls were reconstructed, rebuilt, and relocated, and a new roof structure placed over the top of the whole thing, along with the multiple variances. And if the owner would have known all of those gymnastics that were required, they could have easily gotten a much lower price from the seller with that kind of information. And they would have known that if they would have brought us onto the team before purchase. And we're theorizing, don't really have a real number because it's impossible to know that because it's in the past, but it was probably in the realm of about $150,000+ that the owner could have probably negotiated the price down on that building. Now, I don't know about you, but $150,000 is a lot of money. And that will make quite a big difference on a whole lot of equipment. That'll buy a lot of equipment, won't it, Hon?
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. And so, you know, it took a longer time. It was more stressful. And, you know, it's the prime example. Get the design professional, get that architect involved from day one. And when I mean day one, the way before you sign on the bottom line and buy that building or buy that piece of property, because it's crucial.
Well, let me step back on that one, Jim. When you say design professional, would you define that? Would you define who that is?
One word answer, the architect. A licensed professional who is licensed in the business of architecture. I don't mean the designer. I don't mean the consultant who does this as a side business that, like you say, Han said, so, you know, maybe they're sitting in the Bahamas or some far off location and working out of their one room in their house while they look out over the ocean. No, that's the wrong individual. The individual that you need to have is the architect, the licensed professional who understands all of that. And like in the purchase of property or in the purchase of building, it's not the realtor. Okay. That's the last. I mean, the realtors are very crucial people as part of the team, but they're not the ones that should be making the decision on, is this the right property for me and can I develop it the way I want to develop it? I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of realtors that have a lot of knowledge, but that's not their forte. That's not their training. That's not their background. The architect's training, their background, their licensure is based around what you're asking them to do. And that's very crucial. Did that answer the question, Han?
Yeah, pretty much that. Because the people that, we're not trying to, generalizing our simple response. The main thing is there's a lot of talented people out there and so on. You have to find them. But in general, you know, if you are buying a building and or land, I would imagine that your dental equipment guy or gal will probably not the right one to assess the property for you. Okay? I could be wrong, but our experience has proved that statement to be pretty stinking true. Jim?
Yep, exactly. And again, they're valuable team members. Don't get us wrong. We're not bashing the dental equipment supply individuals and their technicians and consultants that work with them. We're not bashing interior designers who work in the dental field. No, not at all. They're very valuable people. They're very valuable team members, but they're not the ones that should be running the show in the sense of making determinations about things like, is this the right kind of property because of all the issues that are out there? Is this the right kind of building for you to buy for the, you know, the site evaluation? You need somebody who is, who has that expertise and can effectively protect your interest. It's got your back and has the experience and knowledge behind it to be able to say, I've got your back and here's why. That kind of segues on into one of the things that I've seen a lot. I know you've experienced it as well, is without a doubt, here's what a major bump in the road for a project is not hiring a contractor that has experience in doing dental projects and has experience in projects of the same complexity as yours. Now, when I say complexity, what do I mean? All right. First off, here's a prime simple example. A house builder is not a contractor that has enough experience to do a dental office. I don't care what anyone says and what anyone will tell you, a construction company that builds houses for a living, they could be the best house builder in the world. They are the wrong entity to use to build a dental facility. Bottom line, dental offices are not, and I'll repeat that, dental offices are not just big houses. Are they, Han?
No, they're not. That's a quick way to, it's a quick way to getting a headache. Like Jim said, they can be the best house builder, and they may have done a great job on your house. Your office is it's a totally different arena. It requires a different set of eyes, a different set of rules. That's something that most home builder are not familiar with. And no pun intended, it's the worst place to cut their teeth on. Your body.
Without a doubt. I mean, it is just, we see it happen so many times, and especially nowadays, construction is busy, contractors are busy. The good contractors are really busy. And you end up going, well, I can't get the first group that I want. I can't get the second group that I want. I can't get the third group that I want. What do I do? Do I settle for the fourth and fifth string? And, you know, do I find another way to get this accomplished? Do I bring in this house builder / light commercial? And be careful when you hear those words, house builder and light commercial. Light commercial is not equal to a dental office. Definition of light commercial is a retail strip center. Basically a big vanilla box that has a storefront on it, some rooftop units, some electrical in the back, may not even have a whole concrete floor in it, and some sidewalk. That's light commercial. Not an entity that is experienced enough to do a dental office. There's a lot of things that are missing and a lot of expertise that they more than likely don't have. And who's going to educate them? Well, your pocketbook and your wallet ends up educating them, because they have to go through a massive learning curve, which effectively will cost you time, which means it'll cost you thousands and thousands of dollars in lost production because of delays.
Happens all the time.
All the time. It happens too many times. It happens too many times. And, you know, I guess we can't say it more than enough that you have to really evaluate the construction entity that you're going to have on the job. Cheapest is not always the best. And you really, 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 we can't say it any more strongly that you need to have someone who has expertise in doing dental facilities, or at a minimum, expertise in doing complicated commercial structures that have the kind of intricacies that you have in a dental project. And, you know, we as a service help in evaluating contractors, construction entities, project managers, whatever you want to call them, as part of the team selection process. We will help you to determine who the right person is through our process. You know, you eventually will always make the decision. It's not our place to make a decision, but we will help you through that. That's what one of the things that we do to be able to give you the right team member. But you got to have us on early before you've made the decision on who you're going to use as a construction entity, whether it's a general contractor or a project manager. Because if we're not there early enough and you've already said, oh, no, I'm working with ABC Contracting over here, and I want you to design the building. I want you to renovate this existing building that I've already bought. I closed last week on it. It's like, yikes. That's a double whammy. That's where Han and I cross our fingers and hope. We cross our fingers and cross our toes and say, okay, what are we going to see here? And it's like, oh boy, sometimes it's disastrous. And sometimes you get lucky. I don't like to, I don't like to look at the design process as luck. We like to manage.
Here's the thing that I've always make me cringe. Okay. When a contractor get on board, many of them appreciate and like having an architect involved in the project, because they're not the technical guys, they're not guy or gal, they rely on the design professional, the architects, the engineer, to guide them to some of the design issues if they encounter them, code issues and stuff like that. The things that always worries me is a contractor coming onto the project and say, we don't need the architects nor the engineer, because it will save you money. I haven't seen that to be true. Okay. What I often happen is, they don't follow the design criteria. They don't follow the specification. The modification that they do, the omissions and stuff like that, the substitution. Who is there to tell you, the owner, that that your project is being trimmed like a piece of fat? Nobody. And by the time when it's done, you wonder, why does it look nothing like what you had envisioned, nothing like what you have, the discussion you have with the architects when it was designed? It's because it had been literally raped. Excuse the harshness. It seemed to happen too often. Jim?
Right. Well, there's two aspects of that. First of all, when a contractor says we don't need an engineer, we don't need an architect, all they're doing is they're reallocating the funds that would have been allocated for the architect and the engineer. They're just reallocating that into their pocket. And then they're going to hire someone at the bare minimum to be able to get what they need to get so they can get through the building process. But effectively, most of it goes into their pocket. They're just reallocating funds. So there is no truth in that it will be cheaper. It's the same amount. It's just who gets the dollars. And then second of all, the aspect of the, I like to call it the fox watching the hen house. Okay. You don't have that advocate. When the builder is the advocate for you, you effectively have no checks and balances on that builder, other than your hope that the builder will do the right thing. But who's the builder look out for? He looks out for themselves first and their client second. Well, who does the architect look out for? We look out for the owner first and the owner second. That's our job. That's our responsibility. That's our criteria. We look out for the owner on the project as well as their best interest. So their checks and balances are eliminated, and so effectively it allows the contractor to pretty much do what they'd like to do. And remember, you're not an expert in the construction field. This may be the first and only project that you'll ever do. So most of this stuff is Greek, and it's real easy for anyone to get overwhelmed, make wrong decisions that come back and bite a lot, you know, years down the road when the contractor's gone, the project's done, the warranties are over, and you're sitting there looking at, oh, crap. Now I've got to replace the windows. The roof system is falling apart. This thing wasn't detailed properly or designed right. And water's coming into the building over here. You know, this material is beginning to fall off the wall. What? I've got to strip the whole building and repaint it. You know, all those things are just massive dollar signs in the way of maintenance, which could have been eliminated and or mitigated if you had the right entity, like the architect, as part of the team. Don't get us wrong. There are great contractors out there. Not everyone is like that. But in this day and age, when the great contractors are so busy, and they will be busy because they're great, and you've gone down to the second and third and fourth tier, you may be working with a guy who just literally opened his business again after maybe an 8 or 10 year hiatus, and he's working out of his pickup truck. It happens, and it happens a lot. And he's working out of his pickup truck. He has really pretty much nothing in a sense to go after. And so if he screws up, okay. Yeah, he shuts his business down a day later, changes the name on it, and has got another business. And you have zero recourse. Who are you going to go after? Who are you going to sue? Who are you going to try to get any restitution from? Nobody.
Or worse, who's you going to get to finish your project?
And on top of it, who you're going to get to finish the project? I mean, that's the worst case scenario, is you lose your contractor. I mean, that's just disastrous. You lose your contractor midway through. Man, you better hope and pray that you have the right checks and balances in place, that you haven't over-allocated, overspent. You have determinations of how much material is on the property and available to you, so you will have enough funds to finish the project, and the materials are there to be able to finish it for. Because we've got horror stories on that, where contractors were given way too much money during the payout processes and split. Well, the owner's left holding the bag, and the bank's going to say, sorry. You know,
you maxed out.
Yeah, you're maxed out. You can't get any more money. Well, you know, that's a disaster. What do you do then? I mean, that's just like, holy crap. I don't even want to be in that position, let alone think about it. Well, here's another one that kind of adds a little bit to this discussion, and it pertains very, I think, pretty nicely, is hiring an owner's rep and having them act like a construction manager. Now, you may say, what the heck are those two terms? Well, go back to our podcast to deal directly with them. But the bottom line is owner's reps are not construction managers. They don't do the same thing. They're not the same entity. They don't have the same expertise and knowledge. And they sure as hell aren't an apples to apples comparison between their tasks and their roles are totally different. Now, you may want to have an owner's rep on the job. Now, I'm going to define what an owner's rep is and what they are and what they should do for you. An owner's rep is your direct representative because one and only one reason. You don't have enough time to be there to answer all the questions and address the issues that are raised during the construction or during a development project from the day one. All right. You just don't have enough time. You say, I can't dedicate the hour a week for the job meetings. I can't dedicate the walkthroughs of the building on a regular basis. I can't dedicate enough time during the design process to meet with the architect and go over all the things that are addressed, all the questions, because I've got other commitments. So that's what an owner's rep does. An owner's rep does not manage a construction project. They do not manage a development project. Wrong entity. That's like putting a bricklayer into a surgeon's position. And it's that drastic. You don't want a bricklayer doing surgery. And you don't want a surgeon doing brick work. Okay? The construction manager manages the project, meaning they manage, and they're usually brought on right after the architect, and they manage the project, usually from the good ones, from day two. Day one is when we're hired. Day two is when they're hired. They manage the whole project from the beginning of the design all the way through to construction completion and your occupancy. They'll work directly with every team member. They'll work directly with you, and they report directly to you because you're the one that hired them. Okay. A general contractor is just a pigeonhole of a project manager, and they're only pigeonholed during the construction phase. General contractors are not involved during the design phase, typically. They may be on a cursory standpoint or on a kind of like a do you a favor kind of thing and help you out kind of stuff. But a general contractor's responsibility and contractual role starts at construction start. So, you know, that's the big difference. That's a giant bump in the road because there are so many things that get missed. I mean, Han and I could go on for hours on the issues where we've seen this, where owners' representatives, you know, just they don't have the knowledge base. They didn't have the knowledge base, and they sure didn't have the experience to be able to say, well, what about this? And don't we need to take care of that? And what happens here? And effectively, a lot of times they end up pushing this stuff off onto other entities. And a lot of times that other entities are the wrong people to even be doing that particular task. Han, did you want to say anything about that subject?
They don't just push their, you know, what they're responsible for onto other individual. When you have a team member that drop ball, the project suffer. Other team member will be forced by default to pick up the, you know, the load that they are, you know, may not be one compensated for. They're not part of their scope of service, where, you know, the load, the the responsibility that should been shared become fully theirs. It's just a bad situation. If you have the wrong individual at the helm when they have no business being at the helm. Jim?
Yeah, and that's a good way to do it. Now, I've got one more bump in the road, Han, to talk about, and we've got like 5 more minutes. Do you have one that you want to throw in?
Well, I think improperly phasing. Right? So that's one thing that worthwhile to discuss, because a lot of time I think, you know, there's that old saying that don't bite more than you can chew, and phasing is really important when you are looking at building a project, you know, building your office. You need, you know, besides needing to have the right team with the right qualification, experience level, and all that stuff, you also need funding. Okay, money talk. And if you improperly plan your project and build more than you can afford, it's going to show. It's going to show in every level of your and every process of the project. Jim, you want to throw some pens into this when we deal with phasing, because we experience this often as well.
Well, we do. And Han uses the term as phasing. I use the term of planning, but they're basically interchangeable in the sense that there's so many aspects of the project, and having a good thorough process is crucial, because all the little pieces and parts that need to be established are usually outlined in a good, thorough process. For example, one like we have and we utilize. But it's crucial that you have that information, because things like we've seen it so many times, not establishing enough of a budget so that you can get the project done, and basically not having a contingency to cover these bumps in the road that will happen. Now, a good lending institution, if they're involved in the project, is going to tell you that you have to have a contingency. Now, what is that contingency? A contingency is a pile of money that has been earmarked and set off to the side for issues that are unforeseen, for things that happen. And it's there so that if something is unforeseen, or something comes about, or this particular material is no longer available and the other material costs 20% more, that's what the contingency is for. It covers those kind of things. And it's there for you to do it. Because if you don't have a contingency and you're maxed out on your project budget, what do? You get out your checkbook and you write a check from another account, meaning your personal account, or from your retirement account, or from your, you know, kids' college education fund, wherever. You know, it comes from the wrong place. It should be from the project budget account. Have a contingency, and have the right amount of contingency. We always like to say contingency varies. In the beginning, when you're starting the initial design work, you may have a 20% contingency. And then as things become more defined and the budget gets more tweaked and further defined during the design process, you know, maybe then the contingency can go down to 10%. And then by the time you're at construction, you know, maybe you're happy with 5. But you got to really have enough available to it, because we've had shows, we've talked about it. One little issue, one little mistake, one little problem could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you're stuck. You got to pay it, or your project just stops dead cold and you're done. Well, nobody wants that, do they?
Huh? No. No, they don't. Yeah, it's important to have really, part of your planning or part of your phasing is that be real, be realistic about it, okay? If you don't have the budget to do, the complete building, of what you like to have down the road, let's say 12 or 16 operatories type of practice, do it as you grow. But the planning, the phasing, it's important. If you overspend on your project, it's gonna hurt your practice. It's gonna hurt your growth. It's gonna affect you. It's nothing more. Nothing is more stress than get up in the morning and go, I am absolutely maxed out, and I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I can't envision what that's like. But I can't imagine that it's going to be fun. So plan. There's no shame in phasing it, done in small pieces at a time. Okay? It's really crucial to look at every aspect of your project and how it can be executed and talk to your team. Okay? They can help to plan all that. So it's really, really important. It could really make or break your practice. Jim?
Yeah, I mean, a good example of phasing things might be, all right, I'm going to build a 10 operatory, but I can only equip 7. I've got room for 3 more, and maybe you stub up the utilities for them, and they're sitting there, and you use them for something else right now. Okay. You've planned for it. It's easy to augment. It's easy to go in and say, okay, I need that one more additional op. Well, that's great. Over the weekend, they bring in the equipment. They install the equipment. On Monday morning, you're open for business. And you have that operatory now on the roster. But you only do that when you have enough patients to be able to cover that. Because, operatories, to equip operatories is expensive. And especially if you're starting out and you're buying new equipment. Or if you're, creating a second or third practice, it's expensive. And so, sure, we'd all love to have twice as much of what we need. So it's there just on the if come. But paying for it and having it ready, no shame in saying, nope, I'm not going to equip, these many ops, and I'm going to move forward when I have the clientele ready for that. And it may be that you say, no, I'm not even going to build that part of the building until that time. That's fine, too. We do that all the time, don't we, Han?
Yes. We encourage it, right? It's, again, be realistic about what it is that you want to do, can do, and can afford. Because once you dig the hole, hit on the wall, and things like that, you may not have the option to step back.
No. Well, I guess I'd like to apologize in the sense that we didn't want this to be like a lecture, in the sense of, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. But, we're so passionate about these things that sometimes Han and I tend to get to that point where it ends up sounding like lecturing you. We're not lecturing you in the sense that you did anything wrong. We're just trying to get the information across. We feel very strongly about this stuff, and we're passionate about it because we've seen it hurt so many of our clients over the years. And we don't want you to have to experience that when you move forward. Why reinvent the wheel? There's no need for that. Utilize the expertise of the folks that have been before you, and you don't have to learn by hard knocks. You can take that knowledge, and we're hopefully being able to portray some of it out there to everyone that gets a chance to listen to us. So again, we're thankful that you're part of our group and that you're listening to us. Hopefully you gained a bunch of knowledge from it. And again, we didn't get to talk about it at first, but if you have a question, send it to us, throw us an email, go on our website. The information's all there. You can get that. Send us your question. We'll answer it one way or another. We'll either answer it directly or we'll answer it on the radio show. And we're happy to do that. That's why we're here. That's why we're doing these things. It's important to us. For that end, then, Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, it is Halloween in a couple of days. If you're a dentist, you probably say stay away from those hard rock candy. Other than that, I don't know what else to say, but appreciate your spending the time with us. Until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.